This is Talk of the Nation. I'm Neil Conan in Washington. Here are the headlines from some of the stories we're following today here at NPR News. House Speaker Dennis Hastert says he's ready to roll back rule changes adopted by the House Ethics Committee earlier this year. Democrats say the new rules were designed to shield Republican Majority Leader Tom DeLay from an ethics investigation. And President Bush has outlined energy proposals that would step up construction of oil refineries and nuclear power plants. They would also boost sales of energy-saving cars. You can hear details on those stories and, of course, much more later today on All Things Considered from NPR News. Tomorrow on Talk of the Nation, Vietnamese in America, their influence on our culture and our economics, plus an American soldier's return to Vietnam. That's tomorrow on Talk of the Nation from NPR News. The spirit of Robert Peary may be resting a bit more peacefully today. For years, skeptics questioned Peary's claim that he was the first to reach the North Pole back in 1909, in part because they doubted that his expedition could make the trip from Cape Columbia in Canada to the North Pole in just 37 days. Well, yesterday, a team of explorers covered the same 475 miles in 36 days, 22 hours, and 11 minutes, proving that at least Peary could have been right. At the moment, we are trying to establish contact with the expedition at the North Pole. Text messages have been sent. Yes, this is the 21st century. We're hoping to get a call back by satellite phone in just a moment. But joining us now is Gilbert Grosvenor, chairman of the National Geographic Society. He's with us by phone from Virginia. Nice to talk with you. Hello, Gil Grosvenor.
Yeah, it's Gil Grosvenor checking in.
Yes, hi, how are you?
I'm doing just fine, thanks. This is an exciting day for exploration.
Well, tell us a little bit about the controversy over Admiral Peary's claim.
Well, actually, there's several controversies. Clearly, the main one is the fact that he made this trip so fast in relation to other great explorers. Wally Herbert, for instance, a famous Arctic explorer, was absolutely convinced that Peary never could have traveled that far in 37 days, and that was the main reason that he did not believe that Peary reached the pole. What is fascinating is that in the last 15 years, there have been three different experiences that have allowed us to check Peary's records and basically verify that he was where he said he was on the way to the pole. Nobody's going to ever be able to say for sure that he got there, but the new evidence based on soundings that he took and now this great trip of under 37 days and analyzing photographs at the North Pole based on trigonometry pretty well established that he was standing at the pole.
By the way, if you have questions about the possible resolution of what's been described as the greatest mystery in the history of polar exploration, our number is 800-989-8255, 800-989-TALK. You can also send us email, totn@npr.org. But Gilbert Grosvenor, Admiral Peary's diaries and records are less than absolutely clear about where he was and what he was doing.
Absolutely. That is another one of the issues of Peary's validity. There appear to be some inconsistencies, at least on the placement of pages, for example, in the diary. And that is one of the arguments. However, you must remember this man was under tremendous pressure physically. It's not an easy trip, as this group will tell you who've just completed it, an extraordinary trip they made. But you're constantly tired. You're trying to make navigational sightings in minus 20-degree weather. Your hands can't handle the sextant very well. You've got big mitts on, so you can't write very well in your notebooks. It was not an easy passage.
Well, Gil Grosvenor, stay with us just for a moment, because joining us now by satellite telephone from the North Pole is Tom Avery, the organizer of the Barclay's Ultimate North Expedition. Nice to speak with you.
Well, good afternoon from the top of the world.
Congratulations. Give us an idea. What's the weather like? What does it look like up there?
Well, it looks just like every other piece of snow and ice that we've seen over the last 430 miles since Cape Columbia. We're on an area of flat snow and ice about the size of a tennis court, and it's surrounded by a pressure ridge of blue ice chunks. The sun is shining, and it's a mild minus 21 degrees.
with, I hope, a mild wind as well.
Yeah, there's not too much wind, which is great, because we're expecting a ski plane to come along in the next 24 hours to get us out of here.
Well, you're part of a team of five people from, Britain, the United States, Canada?
That's correct. We've had a fantastic team. We're very lucky that we've got such experience in the team, and to be traveling with these dogs as well has been very, very special indeed.
Well, we're given a rare opportunity to have listeners talk to somebody at the North Pole, so let's bring some people online. Joining us first is Tom, and Tom's calling from, we here in Washington usually think of Minneapolis as the frozen north, not in this case. Go ahead, Tom.
Yes, actually, I have two questions. Was the method of travel in this trip the same as Perry's team? And secondly, how do you triangulate your position when you're at a pole?
Tom Avery?
Hi there, Tom. Yeah, well, basically, the way that we traveled, we used the same breed of dog that Perry used. We used the Canadian Inuit dog, which is a very powerful dog. It's spent 5,000 years with the Inuit people for hunting and things like that, and it's a perfect dog for using up here in the Arctic. They're amazingly powerful, but they're friendly as well, and traveling with them has been very special indeed. But to answer your point about the North Pole itself, we used, just like Perry, we used the sun and a compass to navigate. But to pinpoint the exact location of the pole, it's much easier today because you can just use a GPS. And for the final mile, we pulled out the GPS and counted down the yards to the pole itself. And here we are, and I'm sitting in my tent at the North Pole itself.
You used the same kinds of dogs that Admiral Peary did. What about the sleds?
And the sled as well was built on exactly the same design as Peary's. Most dog sledding expeditions that have been to the pole since Peary have used much bigger sleds. But Perry designed this special sled, which he called the Perry sled, which was only about 11 and a half feet long. And it was very nimble, and it meant that he could steer it through the rough ice of the pressure ridges with greater ease than the bigger sleds. And because it only weighed 650 pounds, we could lift the thing up when it got stuck in the ice, which tended to happen quite a lot in those first few weeks. But those sleds were amazing.
I wonder, Admiral Peary also had arranged food dumps in advance so he wouldn't have to carry a lot of weight. Did your expedition replicate that as well?
Well, that's right. Our strategy was to try and make our expedition as similar as possible to Peary's. I've mentioned the sleds before. That was the key part of his expedition, to travel with as light a load as possible. And he started with 24 men and 133 dogs. And as he headed north, some of his men would leave a depot of food and fuel and then return to the shore. And they had a total of four support parties, which we recreated by having a ski plane come in and drop a cache of food and fuel for the next leg of the journey. And they came in at the same locations that Peary support parties turned back. So we feel that we know what it's like now to travel those distances with the same loads and the same method of travel as Peary himself.
Having made it a little bit faster than Peary did all those years ago, I wonder what you you must have thought back to what his experience must have been like.
We did. We were thinking about Robert Peary the whole time, and Matthew Henson and the Inuit men who he traveled with. And I can now see that that dog sledding is the most efficient way to travel up here in the Arctic. Having been to the South Pole, man hauling where you're pulling your own sled, the thought of doing that up here would be very time consuming, and it would take a good 60 or 70 days to reach the North Pole by pulling your own sled. The dogs were the real stars of this expedition, and the fact that they've trained, that they've spent so long up here in these conditions, they're accustomed and acclimatized to the conditions, and they've been our strong companions for the last 37 days.
I understand there was a room for a bottle of champagne, which was pulled out yesterday to celebrate.
It was, and as I speak, we're just polishing off the dregs right now. So it's been very special, and I think it's all down to strong teamwork. We've had an experienced team, thorough preparation. We've had a fair share of good fortune with regards to weather conditions and ice as well. We're lucky that we managed to get through the first degree of latitude without too much problems in the way of open water, because Peary was held up for several days by the Big Lead, which was a river of open water that held him up for a long time. So it's been very special, and we're just looking forward to getting home now.
I bet. Let's get another caller on the line, and this is James. James is calling from San Diego.
Hi, I certainly don't want to diminish your accomplishment. It's amazing what you've done. It's amazing I'm talking to you on the phone from the North Pole. But I am wondering if global warming has affected how the ease of getting to the North Pole. Do you have weather data that shows whether the conditions up there are similar to when the Admiral first went? Easier, harder, the ice melt, that sort of thing?
Yeah, hi, James. Well, I would argue that unfortunately it's becoming harder and harder to get to the North Pole. Because of global warming, there's much more in the way of open water now than there was in Peary's day. We just got lucky going through the area of the Big Lead, but later on the journey, especially the last 150 miles, we came across a lot of open water. We all got some degree of swimming in. One of the team, in fact, fell in right up to his neck, and when you come across a stretch of open water, all you can do is go left or right to try and find, you know, a way across or where it narrows. You put the sleds across as a bridge. And I was just speaking to the pilots, in fact, earlier today, who are hopefully going to pick us up. And they were saying that they've been monitoring the ice conditions up here, and they're keen to get us out as soon as possible, because the state of the ice pack at the moment is what it should be like towards the end of May. There's so much open water now, and they're very nervous about getting a plane in to collect us. So global warming is having a huge impact up here. It's a very sensitive environment. We just feel very lucky and privileged that we've managed to experience it without too much in the way of holdups.
James, thanks for the call.
Thank you. Have a safe trip home.
Cheers.
We're talking with Tom Avery, the leader of the Barclays Capital Ultimate North Expedition, live from the North Pole. Also with us is Gilbert Grosvenor, the chairman of the National Geographic Society, and you're listening to Talk of the Nation from NPR News. And here's an email that we got from Lisa in Washington, D.C. Donald Baxter McMillan, who worked feverishly to help supply Peary's expedition, traveling an estimated 1,500 miles by dog sled to do so, always maintained that Peary made it to the pole as a graduate of Robert E. Peary High School. The school in Rockville, Maryland, was closed in 1984. We always believed he made it because McMillan, a great polar explorer and scientist in his own right, substantiated the claim. Now that you have made it, Tom Avery, do you now believe that Robert Peary made it to the pole?
I have absolutely no doubt that Peary made it to the pole in the time that he claimed. Having spent the last 37 days traveling in much the same style as he did, I can now see that this method of travel with dogs and small teams and having this big support as well meant that he could travel much quicker than average teams. And the fact that our team, we've got some good polar experience, and Matty McNair has been to the pole before, which is great. We're still relatively inexperienced when you think that Peary's men had four Inuit dog sledders with him. Peary and Henson themselves spent 23 years up in the Arctic. But if we were able to match their time, then I firmly believe that that it would have been possible for him to do it in his day.
Let's see if we get one more caller in for you, Tom. This is Mike calling from Nashville, Tennessee.
Oh, hi there. This is just a general curiosity. What time is it at the North Pole?
Well, that's a very good question, because all the time zones of the world converge here at the North Pole. So it's a very confusing place. Every direction is south. So I've been... It's a bit disorientating, but we're... working on, let's have a look now, it's 10 to 2 in the afternoon, so a very civilized time. But since we got here, we spent most of the time in our sleeping bags because we've been pretty exhausted.
It's been, you didn't get much sleep during this trip at all?
Well, we were really pushing the clock, especially at the end. We've been what's called rolling the clock, which is a practice that Peary adopted where you've changed the length of your day. So our days have actually been 30 hours long. So we've been traveling for 14 or 15 hours a day, we've been, which has given us time to give the dogs shorter but more profitable rest. We've been feeding them more regularly. But whilst it's beneficial for the dogs, it certainly has taken it out of us. And, you know, this last stretch has really taken its toll. But we've caught up on some sleep and, yeah, looking forward to getting home.
Tom, you might explain, this is Gil, you might explain how you can roll the clock because of the way the sun goes around the pole.
Hmm.
Yeah, sorry, that's a bit confusing. Up here in the high Arctic, the sun doesn't set at all. When we started the expedition, we only had about 9 hours of daylight. But as the spring has gone on, the sun has risen higher and higher above the horizon, and it's now beautiful 24 hours daylight, and it means that you can do this. You can only do this method of travel in the polar regions. Peary actually rolled his clock the other way. He would, especially from his push from at Bartlett Camp the last 5 days, he actually shortened the length of his days to about 22 hours, which basically meant cutting down on some of his sleep and rest.
Well, Tom Avery,
getting to the pole as quick as he could.
Tom Avery, again, congratulations and safe home, all right?
Thanks very much.
Tom Avery is the leader of the Barclays Capital Ultimate North Expedition. We were talking with him live from the North Pole. Gil Grosvenor, again, congratulations to you on an exciting day for the National Geographic Society.
Thank you very much. It was a pleasure to be with you.
Gilbert Grosvenor is the chairman of the National Geographic Society, and he joined us by phone from his home in Virginia. This is Talk of the Nation from NPR News. I'm Neil Conan in Washington.